It's Talking Football with Rob Daniels and Vince Tracy. Talking Football. So a very good day. Welcome, everybody. It's Europe Calling, and we're talking football with Rob Daniels and Vince Tracy. Our date is the 7th of March, 2024. Our weather is still a bit nippy, but it is March. So we start off by thinking about all the people suffering from wars in Gaza and obviously Ukraine and anywhere else where they have problems. So now we go due west and we should find that the same sort of weather we've got here, which is a nice definition on the mountain. As I say, it's warming up and it should be a nice day. I'll go due west about an hour and we should find Rob. So very good day to you, Rob. How are you today and what's your weather like?
Yeah, hi Vince, hi everybody. The weather today actually is it's overcast and it's a bit chilly actually. It has been for the last couple of days. And you've actually got to put a jacket on during the day. But as you say, we're only at the beginning of March, so compared to what other people have to put with, as you've just mentioned, we haven't really got anything to complain about. But yeah, you've got to be careful against the chill.
Yeah. Okay, well, look, occasionally we do get problems with the technology, and today has not been exceptional. But we're looking first at what went on during the week. I think we'll start with the Championship because basically I'm keeping an eye on your team, Leeds United. I'm pleased to say that you had a win. You're third at the moment, but you could do with catching up second because that would be automatic as opposed to having to take part in a playoff. Tell me if I'm wrong and tell me if you're keeping an eye on your team as well.
I've got no idea how Leeds are doing, Vince, at all, to be honest. Yeah, we're in third position at the moment. After 36 matches, there are 10 matches left because they play 46 in the Championship. And we're in third place at the moment behind Ipswich Town and Leicester City at the top. Now, Leicester, we beat them easily. Well, not easily, but we won against Leicester a couple of weeks ago. But Ipswich Town are in second position, have got 5 wins on the bounce. And Leeds have got 4 and 1 draw. So Leeds at the moment are in third position. Fingers crossed for an automatic promotion because the playoffs, as you know, it's just a lottery. And at the moment in the playoff positions, we've got Southampton. Then we've got West Brom, Hull City, which is a team very close to where I come from. And they are, and Norwich City are also in that kind of position. So it's going to be a hopefully we'll get up without having to go through the playoff system.
Yeah. Okay, well, look, we'll keep an eye on that one. Last night, one of your rival teams down in the south-west, Southampton, they would have played, but there was a bit of a fire right next to the ground, apparently, wasn't there?
Yes, there was actually, Vince, yeah. And they were playing against Preston North End. They were supposed to be playing. And there was a fire very close to Southampton's ground. And the match was postponed. And the firefighters who went out, obviously, they got their job. They risked their lives doing it. And they managed to put the fire out, as far as I'm aware. I don't think anyone was injured, but they couldn't hold the match. So all the Preston fans are actually, because it's a long way from Preston to Southampton, who were already sort of arriving at the outskirts, heard it on the radio and phoned each other when they heard the news and everything, and had to turn back and go back up north again. But, yeah, unfortunate, really, for football in general, but the firefighters did the best that they could.
Yeah. Okay, well, look, there's been some Champions League action during the week as well. So let's talk about the Champions League. Obviously, Man City would be one of the teams we'd be keeping a strength on as far as maybe something going to the United Kingdom in the terms of winning the trophy. Man City were playing Copenhagen, seemed to be fairly comfortable for them. The aggregate was 6-2. Last night's score 3-1. So it's a reflection on last week's game, isn't it?
Yes, it is indeed, Vince. Man City at the moment are going full on, aren't they? And they won, I would say, fairly comfortably against Copenhagen, 6-2 on aggregate, as you say. Real Madrid also played last night against Leipzig from Germany, and on aggregate it was 2-1. So Real Madrid went through. However, Leipzig kept going until the very final whistle and could quite easily have taken it to extra time because they are not playing the away goal being double this season. So but Real Madrid managed to fend them off. So Real Madrid are through, Man City are through. On Tuesday, we had Bayern Munich against Lazio. 3-0 to Bayern, and they go through 3-1 on aggregate. And then we had my team, Real Sociedad, against Paris Saint-Germain. Paris Saint-Germain beat Real Sociedad 1-2 in that match, 1-4 in aggregate. And Mbappe, the French lad, the first goal he got in that match, he actually took the where they hang the net on the back of the goalposts. He actually... It went so fast that he actually dislocated the net, if you like. And he's absolutely fantastic. He gets paid far too much, of course, but they reckon that he's going to come to Real Madrid in the transfer at the end of the season, so we'll just have to wait and see. But so far we've got Bayern Munich, Paris Saint-Germain, Man City and Real Madrid through, and the other teams that are still in goals are playing... Tuesday and Wednesday next week as well.
Okay, well, today I'll just quickly look at the Europa League where Liverpool travel to Sparta Prague. Rangers are going to Benfica and West Ham, they are going to Freiburg. Now, yeah, you've been there, haven't you?
Yeah, I used to work very close to that. Freiburg, actually. It's... E-I in German is pronounced I and I-E is pronounced E.
Okay.
But they're a decent team, actually, for either. And West Ham are going there. This is the round of 16. I think it's home and away. As you say, Liverpool are playing Sparta Prague. We've also got the Europa Conference League this evening. And we've got Ajax playing Aston Villa. And I'll just have a look down the list and see which other teams might be of interest to us. I think that's it for tonight. We've got the FA Women's League Cup at semi-finals tonight, Manchester City Women against Chelsea Women. But as far as the Europa League and things like that go, those are the games that are playing tonight. I think they're also playing tomorrow night. However, it's around the 16, and let's hope that our local teams, if you like, get through.
Yeah, you probably feel like me that there's too much football. I mean, it's totally baffling at times, isn't it? You know, what do you pay your attention to? Because basically, by the time they've put the women's football fixtures in now, I mean, it really it gets quite difficult, doesn't it?
It is difficult to follow everything that's going on, isn't it, Vince? I mean, I don't think we mentioned it, but we've got Roma tonight against Brighton Hove Albion in the Europa League. So, yeah, there is a lot of football going on, and we do try to keep up as best we can, but obviously we can't dedicate 100% of our time to it because we've got other things to do.
Yeah, I mean, I do like to talk about football, and obviously the podcasts are important. But realistically, there are so many things which really take a precedent, don't they? You know, totally and utterly away from where we've been going. Well, I'm changing our order slightly as we go to a thing which is involving Richard Keys. Now, Richard Keys, he is a presenter now. He used to be on Sky. Tell me if I'm wrong, but I think he used to be. And he's currently fronts the Premier League coverage for beIN Sports. And what he's really got his grievance about, he is taking to task players who cut holes in their socks. Apparently it's a common practice after seeing the Chelsea midfielder Conor Gallagher draw on the Blues 1-1 draw with Man City on Saturday. The England star had cut several noticeable holes into his navy socks and led to a ranting post by Keys on his ex account. Many Premier League players have taken the idea, and Arsenal's Bukayo Saka recently spotted with holes in his socks, as well as Joel Linton and Mudrick and Jude Bellingham, known to be cutting holes in his socks as well. But apparently La Liga's frowned upon that, haven't they?
Well, yes. La Liga, there in Spain, there's a player called Guy, I think his surname was. Only a couple of seasons ago, was told by the referee to go and change his socks because he cut holes in them to improve his circulation. That's the idea behind it, apparently. And the referee said, go and change your socks because you aren't fit to play on the pitch wearing socks with holes in. So, it is frowned upon. But Jude Bellingham plays at Real Madrid at the moment. He's the top goal scorer, actually, in La Liga this season so far. And he's been in all sorts of scrapes this week, which we'll talk about later. But, apparently they do it because they think it's going to improve their circulation. But there are opposing views, aren't there? People who do long-distance running and things like that.
Well, I'm reading... I've got a comment here which is exactly in that area. And it was a comment which appeared in the same article underneath. And there's one who said, I was a club runner at a reasonable standard. I always wore tight compression socks that went from the ankle to the knee to prevent calf muscles tearing. And one of Britain's best ever athletes, Paula Radcliffe, also wore them. So I just don't see how the science behind this cutting holes in footballers' socks is supposed to work. Now, when you think about it, it doesn't really sort of hold any water. You know, it seems to be more in the tradition of this rather ridiculous situation where I still believe a group of these people who are trying to change everybody sat down and decided that if you put holes and tears in good quality jeans, you could sell them to young people as a fashion item. I still think that is the most ridiculous thing I've ever, ever seen in my whole life. You know, when we were growing up, if you had a hole in a new pair of trousers or a skirt for a lady or whatever, I mean, you would want to get it fixed straight away. You wouldn't want to go out and show that you've got holes in your clothes. I mean, that's awful, isn't it?
Well, that is, it's along those lines, isn't it, Vince? I mean, it's one of these things that seems to have taken off. Whether or not there's any science involved or not, I wouldn't really know. But I don't imagine most footballers have any idea about science, to be honest. However, it is something that is becoming more and more common. And as you say, these people with jeans that have already been cut, I mean, I think that has gone out of fashion again. But it's bound to come back in. I mean, the 1970s, I mean, people used to wear big coloured shirts, didn't they? And flared trousers and things like that, and high-heeled shoes. Fashion comes and goes, but whether or not this actually has any effect on the player's performance, I really couldn't comment, but I don't imagine it does.
Well, one thing I think it is disgraceful that fans are asked to play huge amounts of money for the kids to be able to go round and wear the kit of these so-called heroes. Now, if these idiots are so stupid as to put holes in the socks, then obviously they really don't care about the club. They don't care about their outfit. They don't care about the fans. I mean, basically, all they care about is the money, which we will be covering, surely, won't we?
We will indeed, Vince, yes.
Well, look.
It's all pretty ridiculous, isn't it? But this business about the socks, Richard Keys, he's quite controversial, is Richard Keys. He speaks out about all sorts of things. And he mentioned this, and all of a sudden, everybody's talking about it, and we're talking about it as well.
Okay, well, look, I've got something that's hot off the press, so I will put an appropriate jingle on.
We interrupt this program to bring you a news flash.
Okay, so it isn't actually a news flash, but it is straight off today's papers. And last week, I was looking at a program called Football Focus. I've looked at it for many years, hoping that, you know, I'll pick up the odd snippet of what's going on. And there's an article in the paper written by Simon Jordan, Football Wokus. Why are the BBC box ticking with midday sexuality segments on a family show? And the problem with Alex Scott. I thought, well, yeah, this is definitely worth chatting with Rob about. So later in the article, he says, I grew up with Football Focus, informing myself about the state of the game and listening to people like Bob Wilson, Ray Stubbs, Mark Lawrenson, who had kudos and cachet. And yet I sat there last weekend and thought, what am I watching here? This was exactly the way that I felt about this. So what were we talking about? Well, he says, I'm not denying it. It's important we break down certain barriers. But is Football Focus the place for it? Surely the show should be about the games, the personalities and the stars, instead of endlessly talking about societal issues. It seems the BBC no longer concern themselves with the content of the shows, but instead about making sure they put certain things, and I think that is the nub of this, on the screen, placing these societal issues into mainstream media via sport is about causes and agendas, and to be blunt, virtue signalling. There seems to be this idea that sport has to be a lightning rod for societal changes that some 25-year-old producer thinks are important. I learned nothing watching it. I came away thinking how uninspiring and poorly chosen the content was, and it's like I'm watching an iconic show die a slow death. The only thing seemingly propping it up is the idea that equality, diversity and inclusivity needs to pervade everything. If everything is built around the idea that you must have the correct quota of representation, and by ticking certain boxes, then in the end you'll have nothing left. And that's what appears to be happening to Football Focus. So what was he really having a go at? Well, I have to agree with him. I was watching it, and they decided that they were going to have a West Bromwich Albion supporter who just happened to be gay, explaining about how he's such a big football fan and how it is going to the game as somebody who's a gay person. And my thoughts at the time were, well, probably, if you've got maybe 50,000 people at a big game at West Bromwich Albion, how many are likely to be gay? Well, according to statistics, no more than 4% of the population. So take your 4% of that number, and I would imagine that would be your maximum. So out of the 96%, why did they choose somebody from the 4%? This seems to be happening all the time, and that's why I felt we should talk about it. Over to you, Rob.
Yeah, well, it is something that is an issue in all walks of society at the moment, isn't it, Vince? Is they tend to talk about people's sexuality, which is something that never really occurred to me before. If I went to see a football match, for example, or if I go to see a football match, it doesn't occur to me that other members of the crowd might be uphill gardeners, or whatever you might like to call them. But it is becoming something that they talk about over and over and over again. And again, they're using football as a vehicle, aren't they, to bring it into the public spotlight when it really is not that important. I mean, I couldn't care less, as long as they don't come anywhere, as long as they don't do anything to me, if you like. If there's other supporters might happen to be of a different sexual preference, it really doesn't matter to me. But they are trying to bring this into the spotlight, and what I find is very difficult to understand is the way that now they're promoting to children that they can choose their own gender. But that isn't just football, is it? That is throughout the whole of society, and at least throughout the whole of European or Western society, if you like. And I can't see the reason why, I can't understand why. It just seems very, very stupid and ludicrous to me. However, on the subject of Alex Scott, she was a very good footballer, actually. She played for Arsenal. She was a right-back for Arsenal for most of her career, and she played 140 times for England. And that was before the women were paid the salaries they're paid at the moment, which are not on par with men's football, but she was basically playing more or less as an amateur, and she doesn't know what she's talking about. And I actually quite appreciate if listening to her, but she has been involved in various controversies herself, hasn't she, when she was wearing a leather mini skirt and a little leather top and everything like that, and she was interviewing players on the pitch after an England women's match, and she's also she's mixed race, so yeah, she ticks all the boxes.
Well, she does, but, and of course,
I actually quite like her, to be honest with you.
Well, look, I do the same, but it does sort of beg the question: how many programmes are hosted by gay people? When you actually look at the statistics I offer, which is the 4%. Then you can clearly see that the BBC have their own agenda of making sure that they do tick the boxes. And, you know, we're always in the figures that don't seem to feature. And it just rankles with me. And I think this article shows you that I'm not the only person that thinks that way. But I'm going to play a jingle and we'll get on to our next topic. Stand by.
Hi.
Okay, so in the UK, they had a budget yesterday, and I'm pretty sure that most of the people listening into our podcast probably might not want to go to listen to the rigours of a budget, but the budget affects the people with lots of money in a certain different way to the way that ordinary people like you and I might be taxed and might sort of think, oh, blimey, you know, they're putting a bit more on somebody's cigarettes. I don't smoke, so, you know, but others will and they'll feel that. Putting a bit more on people's beer, the football fraternity might well like a pint either going to the ground or back. And we're looking at the non-dom tax regime. This is the people that are not domiciled or they don't live in the country where they are making their money. So, Rob, what did we find out yesterday that was either appertaining to the football world or people in those sort of brackets that can earn fantastic money?
Right, well, this is related, as you say, to the budget in the United Kingdom yesterday. And anybody who doesn't know what a budget is, it's called a presupuesto in Spanish, but it's like when the government decide what taxes they're going to put on and what taxes they're not going to put on, and basically try to juggle the economy like that. And what they did yesterday, the Chancellor of the Exchequer at the moment is a guy called, he's called Jeremy Cummins, I think he's called. He decided that he would put non-domiciled status for foreign nationals who live in Britain but are officially domiciled abroad in order to avoid paying UK taxes on their overseas income or capital gains. Now, this will affect a lot of non-British Premier League footballers, Championship footballers, possibly Scottish footballers as well if they're they play for Celtic or Rangers or something like that. And it's going to mean that they have to pay their taxes in the country that they work, and they're working in Britain. And there's all sorts of speculation about what might happen, but there are a lot of players who are in that kind of situation, and also owners of clubs and things like that, these big multinationals and things, who might well end up leaving the British football scene. And if they aren't prepared to pay the taxes in the country that they actually make their money, then I would say good riddance to them. There's always going to be somebody, a local person, who wouldn't have made it. Yeah, to go back to grassroots football, in a sense, local people playing for their local teams. But it is causing all sorts of problems, if you like, because you look at the Man City team, for example, the ones who aren't actually English or British, most of them are non-domiciled status, and they earn their money playing for Man City, and they stash it away in places like Panama, the Cayman Islands, which I think is all these tax havens.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah, yeah, and so therefore they don't pay what they should pay, which would go to providing extra money for the health service. As we mentioned just in this podcast, the fire service, they risk their lives every day and they get paid peanuts compared to these footballers.
Well,
and,
I've got a...
It's quite an interesting shake-up, actually. It should be interesting to see how it works out.
I've got a comment from somebody in Telford. Millionaire footballers use tax laws and accountants to evade paying tax by moving money around and offsetting tax by buying expensive trinkets. Oh, and kicks a ball around. A firefighter paid, let's say, $38,000, has to pay tax and puts their life on the line on a daily basis. For example, cutting a professional footballer out of this expensive car when he crashes it. I know which one I have more respect for. I've got to say, that is really the cornerstone of how society is at the moment. And I honestly believe that we've got our values absolutely skewed. I like to watch good footballers, but I don't think any football is worth more than about £5,000 a week, if I'm honest. That is a big amount of money. You don't earn it. I don't earn it. We've both been and studied. We both did important jobs during our lives. And these guys are playing football, which is important, but I think it's become hugely more so over the previous years, because I see there's so much in the politics. I think that it's undermining economies. I think it's taking away the work ethic. And I think that there's people that know this, and that's why, quite honestly, they've been allowed to sort of get away with it for a while. But whether or not Jeremy Hunt is actually the honest broker that he would appear to be, I'm afraid when his own prime minister has a wife who's got away with paying, I can't say too much other than it would appear she's accumulated huge amounts of wealth via having a non-dom status. So I read. I can only tell you that it appears in the press. I can't tell you that I'm an expert on it. So
I think she's Indian, isn't she, by origin?
Yeah.
And she decided that she would pay her tax in the UK after many, many years of being non-domiciled. And, yeah, so our own Prime Minister, he's not my Prime Minister at all. But, they're in it up to their necks as well, aren't they, let's face it.
Yeah.
However, this was... Jeremy Hunt actually came out with this statement yesterday about the non-domiciled status, and it has been an idea that the Labour Party have had on the table for years and years, because these multimillionaire footballers and other people who are multimillionaires, if they pay their correct amount of taxes, they're still going to be extremely wealthy. It's not like they're taking everything off them. They're still going to be extremely wealthy, but at least they'll be putting something back into the system. And the system, as far as I'm aware at the moment, in the UK, it really needs a boost up the rear, doesn't it? It actually needs this kind of people who tax evasion, tax avoidance, and all that kind of thing.
Okay, Rob,
they need to pay what they owe.
Yeah, let's go to matters on the field next. So we'll go to this one. Okay, so we go to Nottingham Forest, where Liverpool were the visitors, and there was a really controversial, not VAR decision, which we're going to discuss regarding football and referees. Now, as we normally only get to the VAR to really get contentious, this one's interesting. So tell us what happened, please.
Right, well, this was Liverpool, actually, who benefited from this. But at the end of 90 minutes, the time added on, which is, I think they added 8 minutes on at the end, or to start with. But then a player got injured. He got a head injury. And the game was stopped for 2 or 3 minutes while they made sure that he was all right and everything like that. And what should have happened, according to the rules of football, is that it was 0-0 at that time, Nottingham Forest against Liverpool. The ball should have been given to the Nottingham Forest goalkeeper, so he could kick the ball out and the referee would blow the final whistle. But the referee, Tierney, he didn't do that. He gave the ball to Liverpool. And a minute and a half later, Liverpool, Nunes got the winning goal in 90+9.
Excuse me, Rob. I think it needs to be really put into this context now. The referee made the mistake of giving the ball back to the Liverpool goalkeeper. So we're talking about one end of the pitch, and the goalkeeper then kicked the ball right down into the other end of the pitch, where play recommenced. So the referee had made an error, but yeah, realistically, Nottingham Forest were then faced with a ball coming into their penalty area, which they tried about six times to clear. And so eventually the ball went to one of the Liverpool players, who chipped it back into the area, and Liverpool scored a great goal. It was a good goal by Nunes, and they won the game 1-0. So there are two things really here. Number one, the referee made what would probably be an honest error. I say that because basically nobody, I really do believe, probably nobody would have said anything about this had Liverpool not scored a goal. Because basically, there were certainly four or five, six clearances from Nottingham Forest before the ball was actually scored. The goal was actually scored. So I don't know if you'd agree with that, because it was only really after the whistle went and the goal had scored that they managed to come up with the reason why they were annoyed. Because realistically, they should have cleared they had six or seven times that they could have cleared that ball.
Fair enough, Vince. But I think they were unfairly done by Forest, to be honest. because the referee did make a mistake. If it was a genuine mistake, which it probably was, then he made a mistake. However, at Nottingham Forest now, they've got Mark Plattenberg, who most of the listeners will have heard of as an ex-referee. And he was contracted by Nottingham Forest in February, a month ago, as their referee advisor or something like that. Now, nobody knows what he's actually there for, what his job is. But he made an immediate complaint about this because he understands the rules of football. And at the same time, there was Howard Webb, was also at the match, who, as we know, is was a very well-respected referee. He refereed the 2010 World Cup final against Spain against the Netherlands, which we followed very closely. And he tried to make a complaint about it, did Mark Clattenburg, and he wasn't listened to. And Howard Webb hasn't made any kind of comment officially. But the referee definitely did make a mistake, and this time it went in Liverpool's favour. Which a lot of times, as you know, we often speak about, certain referees don't like Liverpool because Jurgen Klopp makes some comments about referees that they don't like. But this time it did go against Nottingham Forest. And it's not the first time either it's gone against Forest, these kind of decisions. But, it's a bone of contention, really, isn't it?
Well, it is. I do feel for Nottingham Forest because I do like the team. I like the manager. I like the club. So I do accept it was tough luck, but in the table of VAR controversies, Liverpool are far and away the team with the most to complain about. So it made a nice change for us to actually have maybe the advantage. But don't forget, as I'm saying, Nottingham Forest had 7 or 6 or 7 or 8 chances to clear that ball. So realistically, I don't think anybody would have mentioned it had they cleared it and there wasn't a goal scored.
No, it would have been completely forgotten if Liverpool hadn't scored that goal. If Nunes hadn't scored the winning goal, nobody would have mentioned it. Of course, not been.
Okay, Rob, looking at time. Rob's La Liga coming up. Here's the jingle. Stand by. Here it comes. Yes. Liga Roundup with Rob Dials. Okay, Rob, over to you.
Right, Vince. Well, we'll start off with news relating to Spanish football, if you don't mind. Real Madrid manager Carlo Ancelotti, he is being charged, or it looks like he's going to be charged by the Spanish prosecutors for tax evasion, which we mentioned previously, about people hoarding money and things like that away. It's happening in Spain as well, unfortunately. I think it's probably happening everywhere. But this is facing, if he gets prosecuted, he's facing 5 years in jail, and these are things that happened 15 years ago. So that's news at the moment. Jude Bellingham, we mentioned also about cutting holes in his socks. He's the top scorer at the moment with 16 goals in La Liga. And he got sent off when they played, Real Madrid played Valencia at the weekend. It was a 2-2 draw after 90 minutes. And again, we talked about referees. The referee in that match blew up. He started a 3-whistle blow when they finished a match before Jude Bellingham had got the ball and put it in the back of the net. And, of course, the whole Real Madrid team were up in arms about it, but Jude Bellingham went over to the referee. And you don't have to lip read particularly well, but he just went, "Oh, goal!" And he got a red card for that, and he's suspended for the next two matches. It's all good fun in La Liga at the moment. But Real Madrid at the top, as you'd expect, really, at this stage in the season. They're pulling away, actually. Girona, the smaller team, are still in second position, fighting for their place in Europe. Best season they've ever had. Barcelona, third position. Athletic and Madrid. Athletic Bilbao and all the usual suspects are like close behind. At the bottom, we've got the three teams from Andalusia, Almeria, 27 matches, 9 points. They're going down, I'm afraid. Granada, 26 matches, 14 points. Can't see much hope for them either. And Cadiz, 27 and 19 points. So at the bottom, there is a relegation battle going on, but there's quite a distance between the bottom three and the ones that are slightly above them. But yeah, it's all kicking off again tomorrow, and it's great to watch, actually. It's very, very entertaining, Spanish football.
Good. Okay, well, we review the Premier League next, so let me just get everything ready here. Okay, Rob, so we're reviewing what happened at Brentford first when the visitors were Chelsea. I mean, we talk about the Abramovich era. In comes Todd Burley. We're talking about huge amounts of money. Chelsea still flattering to deceive. Brentford, a much smaller club. I thought this one would have been a Chelsea win. You thought it would have been a draw, so you got the draw right. Brentford 2, Chelsea 2.
Yeah, well, Brentford, again, are one of the teams, I think it's their third season up, I think, now. But they are one of the more modest clubs, shall we say. They've got some really good players, but they don't have a massive budget. And I think for Brentford to get a 2-2 draw against Chelsea was a very good point for Brentford. And Chelsea, yeah, they flat to deceive. They've got a squad that costs billions and billions. And they can play against a team that is got a modest budget compared to other teams and only get a draw. So, yeah, I thought that Brentford deserved the point.
Yeah, now we go to Burnley next, where the visitors were Bournemouth, and I had insinuated that they'd have turned up with tights and bobble hats and gloves and everything. And, of course, because Burnley is a little bit on the nippy side, I thought at least a draw there. You thought Burnley would win. Burnley 0, Bournemouth 2.
Yes, and this was the Sunday, 3rd of March, lunchtime kickoff, so although the Bournemouth team will have probably stayed somewhere up north the night before, the travelling supporters of Bournemouth will have had to travel. It's, compared to Spain, it's not a very big distance, but it is a long distance. And Burnley, I think they've got one foot in the Championship already. Vincent Kompany, he was one of the best defenders in the Premier League, wasn't he? But he just can't seem to organise his defence. And losing at home, I think they've given up, to be honest.
I like the man, and I wish him well. Obviously, we move on with Everton at home to West Ham. They were entertaining former manager, of course, David Moyes. I thought they'd win this one. You thought it'd be a draw. Everton 1, West Ham, unpredictable again, 3.
Yeah, well, Everton, although they've had some points given back to them after they had the 11 points taken away from them in November last year, they're still in a relegation battle. And I thought it would be a draw because I thought Everton would actually go full on to win it. But West Ham are having a good season, actually. And they've got an outside chance of going into Europe as well, which will be the first time for quite a few years. So, Everton, I think they should be fairly safe. But, West Ham are going really well.
Now, you had a good week last week, and I think it's a shame you weren't doing the pools because you might have won yourself some money. I thought that Fulham and Brighton were sort of nailed on for a draw because I thought Fulham looked as if they'd played some nice games. Brighton, they are like a present from your grandmother. You'd no idea what's going to come along this particular team at the moment. I thought it'd be a 2-2. You thought it was 3-1. Fulham 3, Brighton 0.
Yeah, well, Fulham at home are very, very strong. They're very solid. And as you say, Brighton are not having the season that they were hoping to have. Although they, I think they're in ninth position at the moment, and they are in a, with an outside chance of a European place again. Fulham, not so good on the road, but when they're playing at home, they're very solid, and they won it fair and square 3-0.
Okay, we both saw Luton and Villa being a great game with goals 2-3, I thought it would be. You thought 1-2, and it was, in fact, Luton 2, Villa 3. Villa looking strong, looking for their place in Europe.
Indeed, they are, Vince, and you got that result exactly right. It was Luton, I'd say, are unfortunate in a lot of matches. Because it was 2-2. Ollie Watkins got two in for Villa earlier on in the match, but it was 2-2 until the 89th minute. And Villa got the winning goal in. And that seems to happen to Luton in various matches. They are in a relegation position at the moment. Hopefully, as you know, I like to see the more modest clubs fight their corner and do the best they can and stay up if they can. Villa got it, and Villa are looking for a European place without a shadow of a doubt.
Okay, we go next to Newcastle, where, of course, they are going to eventually have the camel racing round St James's Park. The visitors were Wolves, one to get your teeth into. I thought the Wolves should have won this, actually, because Newcastle have been very, very indifferent. But then again, they have had a lot of injuries. 2-2 for you, but it was Newcastle 3, Wolves 0.
Yeah, now, Newcastle at St James's Park, they actually, it's a very partisan crowd, as you know, up there, Vince. And they actually played like they should play with the amount of money they've spent on players. They haven't spent such a vast amount, but they've spent a lot of money because they've got the backing of the Saudi government, haven't they, basically?
Yeah.
And, Newcastle put on a performance at home, and Wolves didn't have anything to write back with.
OK, we'll look at Spurs next, where they were entertaining fellow Londoners Crystal Palace. Palace, they've got the new manager, but they don't seem to have got their act together. I thought it would be 2-2. 3-1, you thought, spot on. Spurs 3, Palace 1.
Yeah, well, Spurs are a bit hit and miss as well, aren't they, Vince? I mean, their position at the table at the moment, they're there because they've earned the points, but personally, I don't think they've put on the performances to be in that position. But Palace seem to be on a downward spiral, don't they? They are on the verge of the relegation battle at the moment. And it's a pity that old boy had to go. But, Spurs managed to pull it off and beat Palace 3-1. And it's a London derby, so it's bragging rights as well.
Manchester derby was a good game to watch. Man United kicked off with a great goal from Rashford, who had a point to prove. Ten Hag still spouts his rubbish. I think they're not going to do too much till he actually goes. Man City, well, I didn't think they were as dominant as they could have been, but second half certainly. And Foden is a joy to behold, as they say, isn't he?
Oh, yes, Vince. I mean, Man United got off to a good start, didn't they, with Rashford getting the goal. But we're talking about Man City, and at the moment they are dominant, aren't they, really, Man City? And Phil Foden, as I've often mentioned, when he's on form, and he's on form at the moment, Phil Foden, for me, is one of the best English footballers of the present day. And, City ended up winning the match 3-1, which we both got the result right. We didn't get it exactly right, but we both thought City would win. Manchester Derby and Man City they got the bragging rights that they were going to all the time, weren't they, let's face it.
OK. Now, Sheffield United, they were at home to Arsenal. And according to what the pundits have been writing, it's the worst they've ever seen any Premiership team play. Scathing remarks. I thought that they would take a hammering about 4-0. You thought about 3-0. It was actually Sheffield United 0, Arsenal 6. Arsenal, they look the business at the moment. Okay, maybe the opposition wasn't so wonderful, but they've scored about 30 goals in the last three or four games at Arsenal, haven't they?
Oh, Arsenal are really going for it, aren't they, at the moment? Mikel Arteta's plan, which Arsenal actually gave him time to organise his team, which a lot of teams don't. A lot of teams sack the manager if things aren't going right, but Arsenal actually stuck with him, and last season they had a good season. This season, they could go top, depending on the result of the matches that we're going to talk about at the weekend. But Sheffield United, I mean, what a disaster. They have made a record, actually, of in the Premier League, because they've lost their last three matches at home by 5-0 or more. They lost against Aston Villa on the 3rd of February, Sheffield United 0, Aston Villa 5. On the 18th of February, Sheffield United 0, Brighton and Hove Albion 5. And then on Monday, 4th of March, just gone by, Sheffield United 0, Arsenal 6. Now, that must put a damper on any kind of spirit that might be left in the Sheffield United team. The supporters won't leave them behind because they're very loyal. But it must be absolutely dreadful for them, because they getting beaten at home by 5 goals 3 times in a row. It's never been done before.
No. Well, it could be an opening for a goalkeeper coming up there. You never know. OK, now look, Rob, we've only got about 8 minutes left, so let's scoot through these. The predictions for the weekend. Arsenal host Brentford. What do you reckon will happen there?
Arsenal against Brentford. Now, Arsenal are on really good form at the moment. Brentford, as we mentioned, are quite a modest team as far as money and things go. I can see this being Arsenal 3, Brentford 1.
3-1, the same as me. Villa take on Spurs. Give us your thoughts on that one. Fifth place, sixth.
Yeah, fifth against sixth. Now, Villa, especially at Villa Park, they're going to go for it. And Spurs, hit and miss. I'll put it down as a 2-1 to Villa, then.
2-2 for me as we go to Bournemouth. Now, the lacklustre Sheffield United are the visitors. And Bournemouth, tricky little team. They've just been up to Burnley and beaten the second to bottom team. So, a bottom team, okay. What do you reckon on that one?
Well, this is more with my heart than with my head, if you like, Vince. I don't like to see teams get humiliated. And Sheffield United have been humiliated really throughout this season, unfortunately. So I've got it down as a 2-2 draw, Desmond 2-2.
OK, 3-1 to me. Brighton, who are a real mixed bag. Forest are the visitors. I can see Forest having a go here. What do you think?
Yes, especially after the result against Liverpool last weekend. Forest are going to be smarting after that. And as you say, Brighton are not, they're again, hit and miss. I've got this down as a 1-2 in favour of Forest.
1-2 for me as well. Chelsea, all the money, take on Newcastle, the rest of the money. The two richest clubs around at the moment. Where will the camel races mainly be based? We'll wait and see. Give us a score, please. Chelsea, Newcastle.
Right, this is Monday night at 8 o'clock, and I can see this being a draw, Vince. I can't. It's difficult to predict, but is it fair to Newcastle to play so far away from home on a Monday night when all the fans are going to have to go to work the next day and things like that? So I've got it down as a 1-1.
2-2 for me. Crystal Palace take on Luton.
Right now, I'm hoping, again, this is just hoping rather than overthinking it too much, I would like Luton to win this. I'd like Luton to win this 1-2.
1-1. We've got to hurry this along now. Manchester United take on Everton just down the East Lancashire Road. What do you reckon on that one?
Man United haven't got very much, have they? But Everton haven't either, so I've got this down as a 1-1 win.
2-1 for me as we go to West Ham. The visitors are Burnley. I can't really see much going for Burnley on this one. What do you think?
No, Burnley, I can't see them getting away with anything there at all. I've got down to 3-0.
2-0 for me as we go to Wolves, where the visitors to Wolverhampton will be Fulham.
Well, Wolves, yeah, they'll be chomping at the bit, won't they? And biting and things and all these kind of puns that you normally make. Fulham aren't so good on the road, and Wolves are good at home. So I can see this being a 2-0 to Wolves.
Okay. All right, then. Well, look, that's a fair comment as we go to the big one. Liverpool at Anfield, taking on Man City. Resurgent. Haaland scored 5 the other day. Foden scored 3 the other day. Can Van Dijk and Konate curtail those two? Will the fullback, the young lad, play well against Foden? Very interesting. Liverpool, Anfield. They haven't been beaten there for a while, but that's the sort of day that you'd expect Man City to just manage something. What do you think?
Right, well, I don't think the young lad in defence will have much of a chance against Foden, to be honest, if Foden's playing, because he's brilliant, to be honest. I can see this is the crunch match. This is a really big match. Everybody that I know in Spain is going to be watching it as well, because it is a really important match for both teams. I've got it down, unfortunately, Vince. It's not going in your favour, my prediction, but I've got it down as a 2-3 to Man City.
OK, well, I'm going with the 2-2 because it does depend on who we've got available. Mo Salah might be available, but basically they're trying to get him to play for Egypt now and all this sort of stuff. So when we look at the other players coming back, Nunez might be OK, I would think. Stavrosloff will be probably OK. Look, you can rest assured that Liverpool will be up for the game. They've got to be. I mean, at the end of the day, this is one of those games. A draw really isn't very good for either of the two teams because it could let in Arsenal by the back door. And really, I can't see Arsenal being beaten at the moment. But, I'm going for a draw on that one. And I don't really think I would be too surprised whether they snuck it anyway, either home or away. It's just going to be one of those really exciting games, hopefully.
Yeah, let's hope so. I can't see it being a 0-0 draw. But if it is a 0-0 draw, then it should be a really exciting 0-0 draw. I can see there being goals. And if it is a draw, a 2-0, as you say, as you predicted, an Arsenal win at Brentford, then Arsenal will go top. So the top three are going to be right in it, right until the bitter end, I would say.
Yeah. Well, look, I mean, I really think a lot depends on how much of the injured players, how many of the injured players can actually put on a show. They're not robots, and it's easy to forget. Man City have had their troubles with Haaland and De Bruyne.
De Bruyne's been out as well.
They've all
got their. Arsenal have also had injury problems. I think all of the teams have. But this is a really crunch match, and I'm going to watch it. I'm going to make sure that I watch it. This is 4:15 UK time on Sunday the 10th of March. I would recommend that anybody who can get to see this match should watch it.
Okay, Rob, thanks for your company. Very interesting once again. And technical hitches aside, lovely to spend an hour with you talking football.
My pleasure always, Vince.
Thank you, Rob.
Cheers.